Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Market insight and analysis. You're listening to the opening bell of CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
Good Tuesday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Carl Quintanilla with Jim Cramer and David Faber, who will join us in a second. Stocks are set to take a breather here as the market gets a chance to focus on vaccine administration, expecting some comments from POTUS and economic growth as the IMF boosts its forecast for Europe and the U.S. Bond market finds some footing today, too. Our roadmap begins with the continued Archegos fallout. Credit Suisse taking a nearly $5 billion hit, and two top executives are out. The president, the reopening trade, and some encouraging signs for the economic recovery as the vaccine rollout speeds up. The president will speak on that later on today. And Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell delivering a warning to corporate America, saying, stay out of politics. Jim, though, first on CS, we did expect an update today, and we got some firm numbers behind that.
Well, look, this is devastating. The losses they took versus everybody else. I know that the risk control chief has been traded, but I think the whole management has to go. I mean, this is one of those things that's just unforgivable. If you don't know how to handle a busted client, then you shouldn't be handling anyone. And this is it's just a really dark day for Credit Suisse. And I can't emphasize this enough. A lot of companies dealt with this firm. J.P. Morgan said, we don't want to deal with these guys. They questioned the character, which I think was absolutely right. Goldman, David Solomon, they managed to get out very, very fast. Morgan Stanley got out very, very fast. We're still dealing with Credit Suisse selling things. So, wow, this is remarkable. And I think that Credit Suisse has to completely reevaluate itself. And I think the regulators have to reevaluate them. I'm not sure they know what they're doing.
All right. We'll talk about it a little bit more with David. But, Jim, yeah, after a few block trades yesterday on some familiar names, suspending the buyback, dividend cut by 2/3, we'll talk a lot more about CS, which, by the way, they say they have substantially reduced the vast bulk of its exposure, but not all to Archegos.
Man. I mean, it's really, yeah. Carl, I was doing some work on Farfetch, and I kept thinking, this is a Farfetched event. Whoa. One of their stocks that they got hung with. And they were hung. There's a way to deal with this. You get rid of it so quickly that your head should spin. But no, these guys, I don't know what they're doing. I still don't know what they're doing. They don't know what they're doing. They don't.
Jim, we'll get to more of it in a minute. The other big story today is reports that the president today is going to move up, Jim, the deadline in which all American adults would be eligible for the vaccine. It was originally May 1. Now I think we're going to hear April 19th. They're also talking about a new benchmark of 150 million doses administered in the first 75 days of the Biden White House. Jim, our vaccination rate is five times the global average. I mean, it's really remarkable, the pace we're setting.
It really is. I mean, remember, we lost J&J, so to speak. J&J had, what, about 4.5 million they got from the Netherlands. We would have expected J&J to have a flood of vaccines right now. But instead, because Emergent screwed up, and I know that J&J took ownership of that. They didn't have to. It's Emergent. But these other companies, I mean, Pfizer, they're unbelievable. Moderna. I mean, these companies were unstoppable in getting this out. And the state governments seem to have gotten the hang of things. You can't applaud them enough. It really is incredible. And the whole system ended up being on supercharge. There was no more rancor. There was no more state versus Fed. And I got to applaud what happened at CVS, Walgreens, and Walmart. They just figured it out. Once you got into the private sector, they really did a really good job.
Yeah, there was very quickly a realization in the Beltway that people would rather go to their local pharmacy and drugstore than to a mass vaccination site. By the way, Jim, Gallup has some new numbers out this morning. They've been asking ever since COVID began, how worried are you about contracting the disease? It's now 35% of Americans say they're worried about getting COVID. That's a cycle low. As vaccinations roll in and people look at the summer and see the risk as being certainly a lot less than we saw last fall and summer.
Well, I was speaking to Dr. Topol yesterday. He's an excellent follower. He's at Scripps for this Cleveland Clinic. He basically said, listen, no one should be dying of this anymore. We have so many weapons against it that it is a severe flu. Now, that doesn't mean that it's something we should be mindful of. 60,000 people got it just the other day. But there is a sense that you're not going to die from it. That it can be treated, and that our country's getting a handle on where you can go and where you can't. And if you really feel you're younger and you want to go out, I think that there is a propensity to say in large parts of the country, go enjoy yourself. Carl, you talked about it the other day. With so many seniors, so many people who with comorbidities having been vaccinated, it really is kind of like, all right, if you're out, the people that you're most concerned about getting sick, many of them have been taken care of, other than the ones that are really obstinate about it or feel like that there's something very wrong with the vaccine. So when I look at these other countries, I cannot believe, like, every day goes by and nothing happens. Nothing. And the AstraZeneca fiasco. Oh, my. This is something that our country did. We were very, let's say we were arbitrary at the beginning, but now we're authoritative. And you're so right. I mean, you go to my wife got vaccinated at Walmart. And she said, you know, it was really incredible. And of course, she stopped and bought stuff at Walmart, which is really one of the things Walmart would like.
But yes.
Yeah. But she said, oh, and she said to me, she said, you know what, this Walmart, I mean, it's not bad looking. I mean, maybe we should get our plants there. Next thing you know, we're going to Walmart. I mean, it's rather amazing. I mean, these companies really put on a good show while they have done an excellent job. And now I think, well, I got my New Jersey thing today. It says, look, everyone's going to be vaccinated in a couple of weeks. This is incredible, Carl. Just think where we were. There is a vaccine glut, and we didn't even have J&J, which is, I think, was so integral to the process. There are J&J vaccines in the system, but we know that the FDA is looking very hard at this emergent plant where you really did expect that the vast majority of J&J vaccines would come from.
Yeah, I know, Jim. I got my first dose on Friday at a CVS. Very little friction, in and out in a few minutes. I think a third of New Yorkers now have had at least one dose. And it kind of leads us to some stock stories. You got Southwest bringing back about 200 pilots from voluntary leave. Of course, Goldman talking about bringing some traders back in London starting this week. And then Norwegian talked to you about this two-pronged plan to get sailing going both in and out of the U.S. later on this summer. Here's what what they told John Madd.
It's time to get back to cruising. We have a solid plan. The plan we put out to the CDC today is comprehensive. It's robust. It has as its cornerstone, everyone on board is going to be vaccinated. I challenge you to tell me of another venue anywhere that has this kind of ironclad health and safety protocols in place.
Pretty forceful argument there, Jim.
There are some behind the scenes, some really terrible things. How could the CDC not be talking to Frank Del Rio, the CEO? They're not even talking. They're not willing to talk. What more do you need? You can go at a casino and who knows who's vaccinated. 40,000 people at a baseball game. I cruise in a second. I mean, I don't get this. If everybody's vaccinated, what are you worried about, a variant? I mean, there have been 400,000 people have taken trips away from here, just a handful of COVID. They really know how to handle it now. I think the CDC has to say, we got to reward companies that are saying you cannot get on our, in this case, ship unless you have a vaccine. You've been vaccinated. I don't know what the CDC wants beyond. What can Frank Del Rio do? What he's changed the filters. Everybody's vaccinated. You are not going to have any kids on these ships, even though many, many people used to. One out of every four used to take kids. But he knows that they're not being vaccinated. 60% of people only allowed to go, willing to trial anything. And the CDC is so arbitrary. They won't even talk to this man. What do they want versus going to a casino? And it's like anything goes. I just think it's just wrong. They should at least open a dialogue with Frank Del Rio. I think it's outrageous they won't even just pick up the phone and say, Frank, let me tell you something. We are on board if you do X, Y, Z, but I don't know what else he can do. What else can he do? It is just crazy.
Well, certainly the letter that he wrote is intended to at least start that conversation. David, you know, Jim mentioned some fears about a fourth wave or various variants. Fauci was on MSNBC this morning and was asked, are we in store for a fourth surge? And he said, I think the vaccine is probably going to prevent that from happening.
Good. I certainly hope that's the case, as we all do. Guys, I mean, I don't know. Jim, listen, did you see the CDC coming out about surfaces? Less than a 1 in 10,000 chance of getting the virus
from fomites? Look, last year at this time...
I thought that was helpful. Is that going to hurt? Is that going to hurt Clorox and Lysol sales?
Well, it's about time that they recognize that it's aerosol. Now, Clorox has been hurt already just because people stockpiled. But the CDC's emphasis on surfaces killed people. It just killed people. It was about air. If you go watch that documentary, the searing documentary on HBO about the Diamond Princess, all people were concerned. They just told everybody, listen, it's the surface, the surface, the surface. No, it wasn't the surface. Sure, you have to be careful. But it was aerosol. It was the air. And because they were so wrong, and I understand that, David, you're going to say to me, Jim, it was a novel illness. We don't know. But their insistence, their dogmatic insistence that it was surfaces really threw people off and caused a lot of death.
Yeah, well, I'm glad, Carl, that I only Cloroxed my groceries for a handful of weeks there, given that that was clearly not something that needed to be done.
Did you Clorox your steaks?
I don't know what the chances are. Yeah, I don't know what the chances are anymore of whether you can actually catch the virus from passing somebody on the sidewalk in that millisecond. That's my next question, of course. Continue to watch people wear masks outside, everywhere in New York. But we'll see. We're making great progress, I guess, is the key. Right, Carl?
I mean, definitely getting more intelligence. It would have been nice to know a year ago. I wonder, guys, remember when we all talked about the handshake being dead? I think we were still the post nine. Yeah. I wonder if that comment from Walensky yesterday means it's back, or maybe that ship sailed already, Jim.
I don't know. It depends whether you like the person or not.
we'll take a break here. We got some good calls this morning on Snap, on Chevron, Peloton, Wynn, and Morgan Stanley. Cutting the price target on Apple. Well, I will talk to Faber about Credit Suisse in a minute.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration. Our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Welcome back. Did want to get back to a topic, of course, that Carl and Jim were talking about at the top of the show, namely those significant losses taken by Credit Suisse and its prime brokerage operations as a result of the winding down of the family office Archegos, of course. We still continue to have so many questions about so much of what went on here, including how Archegos was able to even amass what at this point seems to certainly have been as much as a 30, perhaps even 40% position in shares of Viacom and very significant positions in shares of a number of other major companies as well. As you take a look at shares of Credit Suisse, by the way, those shares have suffered. And if you're an employee there, you got your compensation to a certain extent comes in stock. You got it not that long ago and you've watched it decline ever since. Not just because of Archegos, but also the Greensill problems they've had there with unwinding that fund as well and the relationship between Credit Suisse and that well documented by the Wall Street Journal. But Jim, on this one, I mean, I heard your comments earlier and certainly you just wonder. It's, you know, risk management. And it's also terrible trading decisions. They were sitting on this position. We saw Goldman Sachs blow it out. We saw Morgan Stanley, even Nomura, even Wells Fargo, and who knows who else. They sat on it, and yet yesterday they then are selling 34 million shares of Viacom. They got it done at $41.25. By the way, the Farfetch at 48, and I think the VIP at 29, just so everybody knows where those blocks actually did trade. And their own stock has suffered, as I mentioned, as well. They say that it's substantially all now. But we still, why do these firms even have prime brokerage? I wonder sometimes, Jim. Given the losses they take there, does Nomura really need to have it when they lose $2 billion? And by the way, there's counterparty risk for the hedge funds that do business with them, too. Remember Lehman when they do these swaps. So you even may be hesitant to do business with some of them in the future.
Well, look, I think if you're trying to crack into the business, maybe you offer prime brokerage and you give them some sort of a rebate. You do something that attracts them. I totally agree with you, David. One of the things you learn when you're at one of these firms is that if someone can't pay, you better get rid of it so fast, whatever you own. It is never a question. I remember there was some client that I had, and I went to my the person who's in charge of my division. I said, look, I don't know. I mean, I think the stock's too low. I think we ought to hold it. And the guy said, yeah, absolutely. He picked up the phone and sold it. I said, but I thought we just said you agreed. He goes, only idiots hold stock. What are you trying to do? Play the market? What do you know about these? See, I don't know where the Credit Suisse people got their culture. Because everybody that I've ever dealt with at Goldman knows that you don't shoot first. You shoot the person first. You tell the person who's in charge, you're done, okay? And then you sell it. And I can't believe that everyone, I mean, anyone who touched this trade, their heads, they should be out on the street right now. Because this was fundamental, David. You never do this. You don't play the market with the Farfetch. Farfetch. Yeah, what are they thinking?
To your point,
it's like, oh, that's high-end fashion. We like it.
To your point, I mean, Solomon was on, CEO of Goldman Sachs was on with Squawk Box this morning. Take a listen, because Goldman did exactly what you just said. They saw signs of trouble, and they blew it out.
This is not the first time this has happened, and it's certainly not going to be the last. We'll certainly see this again. From my perspective, our risk controls worked well. We identified risk early on. We took prompt corrective action to lower our risk according to the contract that we had with the client. And I can't really speak to what other banks have done and how they've handled the situation, but I'm very pleased with the way our team handled it.
There's that culture you were talking about. Now, by the way, Jim, it's interesting. Morgan Stanley also is an interesting one here. They also got, obviously, by the way, when you add up all these blocks, I mean, it does get to some enormous number. You got to be careful. No double counting, but still enormous number that Archegos had. How this was allowed to happen, of course, continues to be a key question. But Morgan Stanley, remember, was the lead underwriter on the share offering. At the same time, their prime brokerage, only a day or two later, was basically saying, we've got a real problem here. That's an interesting juxtaposition, if you will, as well, for Morgan Stanley. What they were dealing with, not to mention all those people who bought stock at 85 who cannot be happy at all.
No, not at all. And it's worth discussing Viacom a little more because the Credit Suisse had some inkling that they were that this company was completely overwhelmed with Viacom, right? I mean, Archegos had so much Viacom, and Credit Suisse must have known that they had it. How could they not have finished their Viacom? Were they hoping for a bounce? I mean, I think they were literally hoping for a bounce.
So.
I mean, which is just like elemental that you don't do that. Remember when Tencent, when Goldman blew it out, I thought there was some sort of PRC rule that made it so that that there was some seller for no that was just orchestrated by the government. No, it was Goldman saying, look, we don't care what price you get out. And look at that. That was, in retrospect, pretty good. Farfetch.
No,
there it
I know.
Is. Underneath
music.
This Farfetch.
I mean,
it's like a joke.
Yeah. Credit Suisse owned, I think they were down as 55 million. Again, this was Archegos, you know, economic control. But they, I think they may have blown, maybe they did get out of that because we didn't see any big block trades of TME yesterday, Jim. But your point's well taken. And it's just, by the way, you know, Credit Suisse, they've been doing really well on investment banking.
Right.
They've been one of the leaders in SPACs. They've been advising on a decent amount of deals in terms of M&A that have been out there. It's this, though, that has just come back to crush them. And, of course, they have dismissed a number of people associated with it. But it never fails to...
I mean,
wonder, what were they thinking?
Did someone actually say, you know, guys, look, if we hold on, Paramount Plus is doing really well. or if we hold on. Maybe, what happened if we hold on, you know, the NFL contract? I mean, there had to be someone in that room who literally was making one of the dumbest arguments. Hey, Bob Backus is really better than you think. I think we ought to make, let's just make a stand here. I mean, that's not your job. It doesn't matter. I need, of course, we don't have subpoena power, but wouldn't you love to know, I mean, Carl, wouldn't you love to know someone saying, you know what, I have historically really liked CBS program. You know, they're the number one network. I think we ought to let it ride here because Criminal Minds, remember that? That was worth a fortune. And let's see if we can't get them to do some sort of a CSI Wall Street. I mean, there had to have been stupid people there because you would never do what they did. Never.
It is. Yeah, it's easy to chuckle at it, Jim. But David, you know, if you took a dark view, you would argue this sort of reflects the difference between valuations across assets right now and fundamentals. Right. That disconnect. How can this be happening, given what we know about the business itself?
Right. Well, listen, when it came to Viacom and Discovery, to a certain extent, we asked that question every single day.
Right.
And again, these are strong businesses. But, you know, the idea that free cash flow even at Viacom is going to approach what it was most recently. No, they're going to be spending a lot on that direct to consumer business for quite some time to come. And they did manage to get a lot more money to do it with, given they were able to sell that stock at far higher levels, Carl. But your point's a good one. Well taken. We see it a lot in this market right now, of course, which we will get back to taking a broader look at, I guess, in just a few moments.
But David, you left out one thing, yeah. The NFT that they might have gotten for I Love Lucy.
Ah, could be big.
Would have been something I would have mentioned.
There's a look at futures, 10-year 168. We're back in a moment.
Let's get straight to the point. You want to grow your portfolio to fight rising costs of inflation or pay off your debt or anything standing in the way of you and financial freedom, right? Yahoo Finance, our sponsor today, can help. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been helping great investors like you. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just looking for tips, Yahoo Finance makes it super easy by putting all the tools and data you need in one spot. Yahoo Finance takes a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and more. You can securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including 401k and other investments. That's how Yahoo Finance gives you insights and helps you take a look at your wealth in its entirety. That big picture perspective is what great investors need. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com.
All right, a little less than 2 minutes before we get started with trading. Let's squeeze in a mad dash, Jim. It's Apple.
Yes, we've got two notes today. We have Cowen talking about the services stream doing much better and really just basically saying this thing is growing to the point that it is a needle mover. And then we have a piece some people regarding as curious by Katie Huberty, biggest bull on Morgan Stanley, raising services forecasts on stronger licensing revenue. That's the headline. But there is a price target cut from 164 down to 156. Now, if you read through this, the cut is about the compression of price to earnings multiples in the peers. And there you'd be thinking about Microsoft, you might be thinking about Google. Now, I do question how much to emphasize the price target cut versus the raising service forecast. This service forecast is the part of the machine that is Apple gets the higher multiple. So I wouldn't be surprised if Apple has an upside surprise. And I think that surprise. And that does matter. And so I would read less into the price target cut and more into the service revenue forecast going up. And not care about the price compression, David. Let that take care of itself.
Okay. Kind of been flat. We can see it for quite a while now, and down about 5% this year. You would own it here, then, is what I'm hearing you say.
Right, it's the bargain in the group. Look, one of the things that's really incredible just is that Fang, other than Alphabet, really had lags. So I think people are really jumping on it because they're cheaper than the highest growth stocks that you know and said over and over again are selling at price to sales. Not sustainable for the average institution.
We're going to watch it surely as we keep our eye on FANG today, guys. There's the opening bell. at the NYSE and the NASDAQ and the S&P at the bottom of your screen. Jim, some of the other growthy names that have seen a little bit of compression is Peloton. And today it is CS that initiates Outperform. But 164, they talk about the company out investing their peers, margins at 40 this year, going to 45, 46 by fiscal 25.
Look, I mean, this is one of those things where I love the headline, beauty in the eye of the bike holder. Credit Suisse, they're comedians on two different things, risk control and research. But I do like the I do like the call, if only just because we're now seeing who really has pretty much made a stand and is able to carry out what they had during the stay at home. I will say this, though, it has not been the way that people are investing. If it's stay at home, it is being sold. If it's a company that got any strength from being at home, David, people don't want it. So I know that Foley, who runs Peloton, very combative, very terrific guy, I think, because he stands for a great brand. But it's going to be a while before we see whether people stop ordering because they're going to spin classes. Spin classes, David.
Yes. Imagine that. Well, again, so for the larger question of the stay-at-home trade, for lack of a better term at this point, you still would stay away, even though many of those stocks have come down from highs.
Oh, I mean, look, we keep getting these price target boosts for United Airlines, Southwest. I mean, Carl, people want to go away so much. They want to go out so much. What they don't want to do is ride on a Peloton inside. I mean, they want to take a biking trip outside, and then they want to be with their friends. I mean, this is a big change. And these airlines, it kind of reminds me of the chip shortage, Carl. It took everybody by surprise that there was so much buying and in cars. Now you're going to see a shortage of planes. And these companies don't want to admit it other than Southwest, which came through with some big orders.
Well, that's one reason, Jim, why Delta started selling the middle seat sooner than they had planned, because they were having to cancel flights on lack of staff. I see UAL today says they're going to hire 10,000 new pilots by 2030, obviously a long-range target. And, Jim, TSA passenger throughput, we monitor that pretty closely, 1.5, almost 1.6 million yesterday. We've had about 3 weeks of 1 million plus every day. That's the longest stretch of the pandemic.
And this is without being able to go to Europe. I mean, think about it. And with flights operating to Asia, half the number of flights are operating. They're going to have to boost everything. The CDC, unlike what they did with Frank Del Rio and the cruise ships, it has been pretty good about going outside. But I think that we're going to see a remarkable resurgence in air traffic when they get things. Look at that. When they get things under control in Europe, whenever that happens, I think those people are ready to come here. I wouldn't be surprised if a Macy's, which is heavily reliant on tourism, has a fantastic quarter once things open up. That is the one that has the best leverage. David, I think that something's happening here that people are underestimating, and that is the amount of money that people have in their pockets. David, if you have a job, you haven't spent the money, it's time. You're going somewhere.
You're
just going to a wedding somewhere.
No, you're ready to go. Yeah, you're ready to go. That said, Jim, as we watch some of these stocks regain a great deal of the what they lost, and obviously we've pointed out many times they've sold a lot of stocks, so they have certainly increased their share counts substantially over this last year. I still wonder, I mean, we bring the CEOs on. We talk to Gary Kelly about the future. We talk to so many of them. Business travel continues to be a real question mark. And it gets to the larger question of, as we finally get back to reopening, how many people really will be coming back to the office? Will it be 70, 80%, 90? How many executives will take, and salespeople and everybody else will take back to going for the meeting, getting on the airplane all the time? You know, I think about road shows, for example, that have been going on lately, many times for SPACs. Nobody's traveling for these things, and they're perfectly happy. They can do a Zoom throughout the day. And I just wonder, to come back to airlines here, trying to business travel, you know, could be years before it really fully recovers, if at all.
Well, how about if you're a major bank and you call your top people in and say, I want everyone who's vaccinated to call different clients and say, get out there and see them. Just tell them, listen, we want to come see you. We miss you. And then they take you out to Bernard Dem, which is a fancy restaurant that in New York. And they have you go to a show or whatever. And the next thing you know, that firm's doing more business. I think that's what's going to happen. I think it's going to be
you
a.
Do.
Yes,
you
I so? Do. Yes, I do.
So you
I
think it goes right back. So you do believe it goes back to what it was?
Yes.
Because, you know, so many of these companies, and we're not just talking about the big Wall Street banks here, but think about a large seller of software that has a big sales force. I mean, they've been doing business and doing it extraordinarily well by not leaving their homes.
Yeah, but Adobe
and saving a great deal of money as a result, Jim.
But Shantanu Narayen boosted the expense structure for the fourth quarter because he expects people to go out. So I don't know, David. He's about as good as it gets. He had a major quarter, and I think he is playing defense. He does not want people to doesn't want people to stray. So look, I think it should. Look, it's not going to be as much, but they've raised the tickets very substantially for individuals, and I think that there will be a lot of competition again. And the next thing you know, we're going to be saying, "Wow, you know what? Goldman went to see that client. You get on board. That client obviously is willing to see someone who's vaccinated." So it may not get back to all the way, but I do think that there's going to be fear that that J.P. Morgan is going to get the client if Goldman doesn't go. Mm-hmm. Carl, it is a competitive
world out
there.
I think that's interesting. I was going to say, at what point does Darwinism, corporate Darwinism between firms and between employees, right, return? When is it an edge when you're closer to the boss? David, the Journal's got a great piece today about commercial real estate, an exclusive where they look at some office leasing trends, and their general takeaway is that big companies are committing to big cities, but with a lot less space for and lower rents for longer periods of time as they sort of do a big cost reset on their physical office space.
Yeah, and that's going to continue for quite some time. It's funny, I had a couple of conversations with experts in this area yesterday, funnily enough, Carl. And, you know, I think the thought is that a lot of space will be reconfigured for the new reality in some fashion. So you're going to have to, as a landlord at least, there's going to be a CapEx involved. And you are going to expect lower rents, substantially lower in many of the key metropolitan areas. And it's hard to imagine you're ever going to fill the same amount of space that you did previously, or at least going to have a need for a great deal of additional space, which does get back to, you know, commercial tenancy and what that's going to look like for those landlords and even hotels and the like, Jim. Again, you know, we talk about what we expect potentially and hope will be a boom in leisure travel, and it may very well happen quickly. But longer term, many of those hotels also rely on business customers. So I guess your thinking is it will eventually come back, given what you said earlier. But I think there's still a lot of question marks.
No, look, I'm not denying that kind of customer won't be back. I just think that we tend to take it for granted that Zoom worked. And I think Zoom's real good. I use Zoom all the time. But I also think that if I were in business, I would say, it's too significant. Why don't you go to that city? Why don't you see if that person's willing to see you? Just fly there. Give it a shot. Because we're so concerned that Morgan Stanley is going to get that business if you don't go. I'm using the financials because I've been in a world where I know that you wanted to see them face to face. I mean, if I worked at one of these giant software companies, I would be concerned. It won't be as good. But I think it will be made up by the individual person who is catching up and going to a wedding every weekend. I mean, I think you're going to have a wedding every weekend. And some people are very convivial and they have something to do and they haven't had anything to do in a long time. Carl, there's people who have been so cooped up. I just think it's going to be remarkable what's going to happen. But that's been my roaring 20s thesis.
Yeah, we're gonna see, Jim, whether households have so much money that they don't need to choose between spending more on their homes and themselves and experiences like going out and travel. I do want to get you on oil briefly here. We got a lot of the oil companies leading the charge in what is a pretty tepid tape. But Goldman does cut CVX to neutral. They talk about it being an outperformer against its peers since 2016. And there's better upside elsewhere, they argue.
Look, CVX, I got to tell you, I think that Chevron is the best in the group. I understand that they like Exxon more. What I think is most interesting is we're really getting People dumping on Pioneer. J.P. Morgan saying buy to hold. Why? Because Pioneer is going back to M&A, and they're issuing 27.2 million shares. David, for an alpha double point, it's a private equity alpha, and they also pay $1 billion. And people don't want to see that. What happened here is that there was a shy away from M&A move, and there was a return of capital to shareholder move. David, Pioneer is breaking that. And I think people are very concerned that it's going to lead to a wave of M&A, and that in itself will hurt the group. I don't think so, but that's what people are worried about.
Interesting. Well, Jim, as you know, we're going to get an opportunity to talk more about a lot of different things involving oil and gas, and as well carbon capture and sequestration, because we are going to be joined by Darren Woods, the CEO of ExxonMobil, tomorrow right here on the program, guys. Looking forward to that conversation, certainly. I know we all are. So I did want to let our viewers know.
And your colleague
Darren
knows.
My colleague?
I didn't know.
You?
Yeah, I didn't know.
You didn't know?
No, I didn't know.
You can't tell people you didn't know. Well, if we were together in the office, you would have known.
Okay.
But CNBC won't let me
come
back.
You won't believe who
you know?
I have.
Because I crossed a border, and that's it. I can't come back. We can never come back.
Carl,
I'm never allowed back.
I broke all the TV rules by saying that, speaking truth, that I didn't know Darren was on. It's fantastic. I like great job, David.
I'll call you later. I know. I'll call you later. We'll discuss it now that they all know that.
It's a live example of what gets lost, guys. What gets lost when we're not sort of in the hallway together and chatting at our desks?
Nope. Diamond Hands Faber's got a good one.
Let's get to Bob Bassani on this Tuesday. Hey, Bob.
Good morning, guys. And we will all be back at the New York Stock Exchange, I am quite sure, at one time. And I look forward to that as well. Flattish open, but don't kid yourself. This is a very powerful rally that we're in the middle of. Flattish, I mean, yeah, you got a little movement from energy, which has had a little trouble recently. But industrials, banks, tech, the stuff that you look for to move the market, kind of on the flat side. But when I say this is a powerful rally, I mean, like, what are we doing? Are we buying travel and entertainment stocks because we're going to all go out in the second half of the year? Are we buying stay-at-home stocks? And the answer is we're buying a little bit of everything, and that's why the rally is so powerful. So look at these stay-at-home stocks. I know they're not supposed to be popular anymore, but, you know, yesterday there was Home Depot and Lowe's and Target at new highs and Sherwin-Williams at new highs and Masco at a new high. Why? Well, people still apparently have money to buy things for their home and are continuing to intend to do that. And a lot of the big technology names, the growth sectors. So we had value at a new high yesterday. We had many growth names at new highs yesterday. So we saw Microsoft and Alphabet and Facebook at a new high. Texas Instruments put up some of the tech names there at new highs yesterday. And many of the chip stocks, Slam Research, constantly at new highs. Again, the beneficiaries of stay at home, but these have been market leaders for a long, long time. At the same time, most of the travel and leisure are not new highs, but they're awfully close. At the close yesterday, most of the big names that we saw were 1 to 5% from new highs, including Delta, including Marriott, Carnival, most of the big airlines as well. So not new highs, but darn close to it. So everything is sort of rising at this point. Industrial stocks, I keep pointing out every single day, the old school stalwarts, 3M, for example, Honeywell, all the railroads, Eaton and Dover. These are really deep, big global cyclicals that are benefiting from that reopening story, all hitting new highs. So what's going on? Are we staying at home and buying things for the home? Or are we all going out and travel? And the answer is a little bit of both. And that's why the rally has been so powerful, so broad, and so much participation. Look where the S&P is. We moved up about 5% in the last 7 days. So today, the S&P is up close to 9% for the year. The earnings growth up close to 5%, thanks to my friend Nick Colas at DataTrack for pointing that out. So the S&P is moving faster than the earnings growth, and the earnings growth is pretty good. So once again, it looks like the analysts are a little too conservative in their numbers. That's what the market is saying. We'll see if that happens. Remember, we start earnings season next week, and the only thing, folks, anybody wants to hear about is the reopening story. Normally, CEOs are going to be very cautious. This time, I think people want to hear about the reopening story. It's going to be a very exciting earnings season starting next week. Carl, back to you.
All right, Bob, thank you. And of course, that narrative is going to have an impact on what central banks around the world may say. Let's get to Rick Santelli.
Well, you know what, Carl? It doesn't seem to have a huge impact on what central banks are saying yet, because, of course, we had Mester on yesterday on CNBC, and all the strength, and even she acknowledged how strong the jobs report was, but nay, nay, shall we put stimulus away, is what she said, and I'm paraphrasing, of course, and I guess that is what's going to get exciting in the future, because it doesn't matter what they say now. It's what the future reality is that they are going to have to deal with that will matter. And just because you tell people, take your time, the Fed's in the driveway warming up the car, doesn't mean that's what they're actually going to be doing as we start to, A, dip under 6% with regard to unemployment, and we will do that in the future. And, of course, the notion that we're going to have seven-figure jobs reports, it almost seems inevitable. Look at the Treasury drift, if you will. Here's a chart of 1 week of 10-year rates, and it seems as though, once again, we're drifting from that mid-170s high close, which was on the 31st, and 177, the high intraday, as you see on the left side of that chart. And maybe you see the drift most in the longest maturity, 30-year bond. This is a end-of-February look, and 245 is the high close, and we've continued to drift away. You can see it in the note over bond spread known as the knob. Here's a knob spread that goes back 1 year because it's basically right now the widest it's been in a year, and maybe it'll find footing here or not. Remember, what many traders like to look at the knob spread for is momentum on long-dated Treasury yields. And when that spread was flattening out, what many said is, hey, probably 10s aren't going to zoom through that 175. So we want to see if it starts to make a footing of consolidation right in this mid-60s level. And if we consider the fact that foreign exchange and the strength in the dollar has altered some perceptions over the last couple months, but is starting to weaken again. And it's weakening because of the euro currency. Here's a two-week chart of the euros. You can see we're starting to pop through on the right side of the recent range. Open the chart up to February, end of February, and you could clearly see that if we start to trade above that drop on the left side of the chart that was 118.50, we will start getting some momentum, and we're about ready to test it intraday right about now. Carl, Jim, David, back to you.
All right, Rick, thank you. Rick Santelli. So as Rick said, bond market finds a little bit of their legs. Major averages largely flat. VIX, though, below 18 for a third straight day. We're back in a moment.
I found it completely discouraging to find a bunch of corporate CEOs getting in the middle of politics. My advice to the corporate CEOs of America is to stay out of politics. Don't pick sides in these big fights.
That's Senate Minority Leader McConnell weighing in yesterday on the CEOs who have been outspoken about issues such as the new voting laws in Georgia. Jim, people largely reflecting on the fact that McConnell has spent most of his career giving corporations more political voice, not less. But also as the Washington Post this morning puts it, an ongoing fraying between the GOP and corporate America.
Yeah, look, I think that what's happened during this period is, to quote Mark Benioff, business has been the greatest force for social change. I mean, I think it's incredible how well business has done in trying to influence things. Now, you could say, well, business is left wing. I come back and say business is trying so hard to become a force of good. Now, again, David, a force of good may mean a force of bad to some people, but we've seen corporations get very involved in order to be able to be pro-social change. And I think that you could argue that if you're gay lesbian, you're happy. And if you're anti-gay lesbian, you're not. But I do think that anti-gay lesbian is certainly not in the keeping of the Constitution.
No, listen, it's so interesting, Jim. And let's not forget, we've been following this long before the pandemic sort of overtook us, the growth of ESG investing, the pressure being brought on many corporations in terms of their carbon footprint, in terms of their governance and the way they approach the world, social justice perhaps being a part of that as well. And the feeling on their part that it wasn't just about shareholders, but their other constituencies, including, of course, the consumers of their products and their employees, that made them feel as though they needed to engage. But there's a danger there. And it's something that I've actually spent a good amount of time talking to a number of CEOs about for our Evolve series. It's online, including Chuck Robbins from Cisco. Take a listen to what he had to say.
When we decide to talk externally, what are we trying to achieve? What is it? In some cases, it's just a fundamental agreement that, you know, our country and others need to hear leaders, you know, trying to speak to issues to bring around hopefully more unity than we see in the country. It really depends on the issue, but we really spend a lot of time talking through them. We don't do it lightly, and some of them are super clear and some of them are not, and some are more controversial than others, but it's just a complicated world that we live in.
Mitch McConnell may not want to hear from CEOs, but the sense is, I think, certainly when you listen to Mr. Robbins, that you are going to continue to see many corporations engage. We'll be right back on Squawk on the Street.
All right, Jim, what's on Mad tonight?
I got ServiceNow and Qualtrics. I also have Honeywell and David. I see you're Darren Woods, and I raise you with Will I Am, okay? So you think that you have somebody big that I didn't know about? You didn't know I have Will I Am. Take that.
That shut him up. Jim, well, we'll see you tonight.
All right.
Mad
Thank
Money,
you guys.
6 p.m. Eastern time. Relatively stable markets, although we could get an S&P high in a few moments.
You've been listening to the opening hour of CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
The spirit of performance defines Acura. And now it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.